from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel. It's like the Lord.
Hi everyone, I'm Gary Noel. Today, how probiotics can impact and suppress fatal brain inflammation. Now consider how many people end up suffering from fatal brain inflammation. We're talking about an enormous amount of the population. City of Hope has an article on this. I'll share it with you. Also today, something unusual. We've never done this before that I'm aware of in the history of this program. And that is, I'm going to share not one, but two original in-depth investigations, one challenging the New York Times and what we're calling the New York Times descends into conspiratorial paranoia about supporting 5G. And this is because tomorrow there's going to be a major demonstration in New York and throughout the country. And I want people who are organizers of that event, those who are going to be a part of it, and everyone else to know we have the science on our side, real independent science. How much? 10,000 articles. What do they have? They have nothing. They literally have nothing. Oh, no, that's not true. They have the New York Times, CNN, Washington Post. They have virtually all of corporate media. They have all the federal regulatory agencies. So they have a lot. So if we do not do something now, it is my belief that we will face the greatest health hazard in American history, dwarfing the fallout from the nuclear explosions during the 1950s when we were testing them and exposing soldiers up close, worse than the uranium mines and the plutonium and interfering with the entire immune system of Navajo Indians and denying it, worse than Agent Orange, which sickened about 3 million GIs in Vietnam and the citizens living there to this day. It's third generational contaminant. Worse than cigarette smoking, which has killed more than 25 million Americans since it was popularized at the beginning of the last century. More than all of the pesticides used, including DDT, DDE, aldrin, heptachlor, and glyphosate. You're talking about something that is about to happen, is happening, that there'll be no safe place on Earth with 20,000 satellites beaming down. The whole planet will be involved in this. And since the government never once, not once in its sordid, putrid history of the last 100 years has come forward to be on the side of the population, always, without exception, whether it's DDT, Agent Orange, asbestos, a depleted uranium, toxicity of nuclear plants leaking, food additives, the fraud of the American food system and all the quackery within the dietitians, giving people this quack food because they didn't have, obviously, the brains to look at the science. It was there. I'm a graduate in dietetic sciences. I can tell you, you were exposed to nothing but propaganda. So exactly who's supposed to defend us in the future? It generally takes up to 30 years once something is thought to be or found to be dangerous to get it out of our lifestyles. That's why this is important. Then we're continuing with our series on Wikipedia. Quote, Wikipedia fails again. The case of misinformation about curcumin. Anyone reading Wikipedia today for anything involving health or the sciences should ask themselves why. Why not look it up in the National Enquirer? Oh, you don't trust the National Enquirer. Well, neither do I. And I absolutely positively do not trust anything that Jimmy Wales or Wikipedia or its anonymous editors or the skeptics have to say. And today, we'll drive a stake through that lie about curcumin. You'll see the facts. So two reports today. If time is left after that, we'll go to a G5 congressional hearing under oath where scientists are saying what's wrong with it. And this is in addition, not a replay of yesterday's program. Now, for all of you who care to be informed, who actually want to be mindful and aware of facts, you'll have an opportunity because we've done your homework for you. So all you have to do is read it, challenge it if you want, be critical of it, that's fine, but then do something with it. Join the cause. Let's begin. The existence of certain microorganisms that we discuss regularly on this program live in your gut. They're there to bolster the immune system's ability to fend off, let's say, a herpes viral attack that can cause fatal brain inflammation, reports a new City of Hope-led study. Researchers say the findings are the first to suggest that an envelope molecule from a bacterium might be useful against viral inflammatory disease. It's called a capsular polysaccharide A, or PSA. The envelope molecule appears to promote protective anti-inflammatory responses during a viral infection. And that's important. So I won't go through all of the different ways that it stops a fatal inflammatory response in the brain, but the general rule in science is if you have good quality research and your research methodologies are sound. So if I used, let's say, vitamin C, and I found that by taking 15,000 milligrams a day of vitamin C, I was able to prevent breast cancer, then why could I not also extend to say, should it not also be plausible that it would affect all other cancers in the body? It's a reasonable projection, and the answer is yes. Now, it doesn't work that way in our society. So if you found that there are 300 viruses, different types, let's just say Coxsackie, adeno, cytomegalovirus, herpes 1, 2, and 6 among 60 plus additional herpes viruses, and hepatitis A, B, C, though one is foodborne, B and C are not. But let's just say that you did really good work and you proved that taking vitamin C protected you if you had hepatitis C. It extended your life and kept the virus from manifesting to where you were at a critical high inflammatory level. We would then have to do another set of tests on every single virus in every single system of the body. We are completely enamored by monotheism, meaning single purpose. We only see one thing and nothing else. And therefore we walk around highly educated, very academically disciplined in that one piece of a puzzle. But what if there are 1,000 more pieces of the puzzle before we see the total truth of something? Well, too bad. You're going to have one piece, and that will always limit you. So that's why this is an important study. So I'm suggesting if we have something like good probiotics, just good bifidobacteria, let's say you had miso, tempeh, tofu, sauerkraut, kimchi, or probiotics, you took a billions per day, there's every reason to believe that it will protect you from inflammation in other organs of the body. So that's what it means. All right, and by the way, some of these can go to encephalitis. Encephalitis kills. This was published in Nature Communications. So get your probiotics in and stay safe and healthier. From Columbia University comes a study about the omega-3s. They improve birth outcomes, including decreasing the risk of miscarriage and stillbirth. Now, I'm sure that you've undoubtedly seen the headlines touting the health benefits of the omega-3s in recent years. You might even be able to name some of their biggest accomplishments, such as promoting brain and heart health, fighting depression and Alzheimer's. However, this nutrient also has one very important and often overlooked benefit that should put it at the top of every pregnant woman's list: the ability to prevent miscarriages and stillbirths. According to a study that I just read in JCI Insight Journal that was carried out by researchers from Columbia University, the omega-3 fatty acids can help prevent pregnancy complications like preterm birth, stillbirth, neonatal death caused by a common bacterium in the mouth. And it's behind the uterine infections responsible for up to 30% of preterm births, and the researchers say it's ubiquitous. So while everyone has it in their mouths, it causes a big problem when it travels to other parts of the body. For example, hormonal changes in pregnancy can cause gum bleeding that creates an entry point for the bacteria to get into the bloodstream, where it can then make its way to the placenta and trigger miscarriage or stillbirth. So the scientists looked at the omega-3 fatty acids and found that it reduces inflammation all over the body, in the heart, in the arteries, in the brain, with rheumatoid arthritis. And after further experimentation, they found that the omega-3 fatty acids inhibited the growth of the bacteria and inflammation among pregnant mice in this case, thereby reducing stillbirths, miscarriages, and preterm births. So that one more reason, if you're pregnant, make sure you're getting your omega-3 fatty acids. I remember it was probably 25 years ago when I first mentioned alpha-lipoic, L-I-P-O-I-C, acid. Now there's new research showing why it's simply one of the most important antioxidants we can have. This is from a university in Italy, and it was published in Oxidative Medicine Cellular Longevity, and it shows that if you take alpha-lipoic acid and vitamin D together, it can slow your brain aging. So, two more nutrients to add to our armamentarium against premature aging. So they investigated the effects of these nutrients on oxidative stress and iron accumulation damage, and both of which impact brain aging. So what it is, I don't want to get into hard science because it's a little confusing, but the cultures of star-shaped brain cells, they're called astrocytes, which are responsible for the maintenance of your neurons and synaptic functions, were treated with hydrogen peroxide to model oxidative stress and with catalytic iron for 6 days to induce neurodegeneration. It was initially demonstrated that vitamin D and alpha-lipoic acid were able to cross an in vitro blood-brain barrier, confirming their usefulness in human brain disorders. And in cells treated with hydrogen peroxide, the nutrient combination decreased a type of programmed cell death, and that was important. So, we're a nation that has nutrient deficiencies. Rarely, if ever, do you find alpha-lipoic acid in any supplement, but add alpha-lipoic acid. How much? I would suggest starting at 100 milligrams a day and going up maybe to, if you're not sick with something and you're otherwise in a really good healthy way, maybe 200 milligrams a day. Beyond that, do so under the guidance of a nutritional biochemist or someone who's familiar with nutritional biochemistry. Now, University of Sydney has just found that nano particles, particles, those are very small, are present in many food items, and they are harmful on human health. The study investigated the health impacts of food additive E171, which is titanium dioxide nanoparticles, commonly used in high quantities in foods and some medicines as a whitening agent. It's found in more than 900 food products, chewing gum, mayonnaise. It's everywhere. And it's consumed in high proportions every day by the general population. An article in the peer-reviewed journal Frontiers in Nutrition found that consumption in the laboratory of foods containing E171 has an impact upon the gut microbiota. Now, those are the trillions of good bacteria that inhabit your gut. And that, unfortunately, can trigger diseases like inflammatory bowel disease and colorectal cancer when these nanoparticulate matters are there. So, one more reason why you should be eating clean food, organic food, and none of the highly processed foods where you're going to get these nanoparticles. Also, working out, to work it out. What do I mean? Exercise creates endorphins, and endorphins fight depression. Every day for the last 2 weeks, until the retreat ended, I took a group of people who none of whom were athletic, many who couldn't walk. Well, one woman, I'll give you an example. In fact, Jesse, if you're listening right now, see if you can find the woman who couldn't walk at all. She was on a cane. She was there with her son, and she'd had surgery on her hip 9 months before, and she was in excruciating pain. On her last day, which was just a week, I asked some people, would you like to go for a walk? I didn't say how far. I simply said, walk until you get tired or until you get sore. Don't walk through it. Just stop. And it was just a mile out and a mile back. In fact, it wasn't. It was a half mile and a half mile back. So they were always within view, and we had people in golf carts and cars in case they couldn't make it back. We'd just go out and pick them up. Well, not only did everybody make it back, five people, remember, you're talking about some of these people being very sick, many overweight, many with extreme physical limitations. They kept walking on their own, and they did a marathon, 26 miles. In fact, one woman who was there with her two teenage daughters, and by the way, we had people 13, 15, 23, 27, 29, 32, had a lot of young people. The mother, with a half a mile to go, started running. And I just happened to have been out there, and thank goodness I had flown in, not for this, I had flown in my cinematographer, Roland, because I was going to do a series of lectures. And I wanted these lectures, very original, on motivating self-empowerment issues, and one on my brand new finished research. All these years it's taken me, I finally finished, where I can mathematically add up how long you're going to live, more or less within a few years. I can prove absolutely and scientifically that you could add 30 years onto your lifespan, healthy years, not sick. Or at the same time, I can prove where you can knock 50 years off your lifespan. And I'm going to publish the results, but I wanted to film it, and I did. I filmed for three straight days, and the audience had a chance to sit in on the lectures if they chose. So he was out there, and I said, film this woman. She went on to a rip. She ran up a very steep hill for the last quarter mile, and she finished, and she left her daughters and husband behind. They couldn't keep up with her. And I'm guessing she's in her late 40s, early 50s. But you talk about a breakthrough. That's a breakthrough. In any case, right behind her was that woman who told her husband, she told me this, she said, I had to tell my husband when we went to the mall, I had to go shopping, I can't go any further. And he said, but you've only gone a minute. She said, I'm in pain, I have to sit down. And so every minute, that's as far as she can walk. Every minute, then she's in excruciating pain. On her final run, and I didn't even know she was out there because I was handling other things since it was everyone's last day. And there she comes. She had been out there for 6 miles, and she was running. I mean running. I'm guessing she's in her 60s. And I said, how you feel? She said, I have no pain. I haven't had pain since earlier in the week when we were doing some energy work. And she said, I have no pain, and I can't believe it. I can't believe it. She started crying. And if we don't have an audio clip of her, we will... I'll get an audio clip off the film that we sent. In fact, I'll just post up on YouTube. I'm going to do it in the next couple of weeks because we filmed 76 hours. So I'll put it up there so you can watch it for yourself. So anyhow, earlier in the week, I explained what are the reasons why we should work out every day. And those reasons include, but not limited to, you're going to burn body fat, and therefore your metabolism will increase, which means even when you're sleeping, you'll burn about 10% more calories. You will have more lean muscle tissue as your muscles are not being used under normal activity. Now they are. You'll be able to produce more human growth hormone, which means your muscle mass will be more intact longer in life. You're less likely to have loose skin. You'll increase circulation to the brain and to the extremities, so you won't have those purple ankles and feet and splotches all over your legs. But most importantly, better digestion and better thoughts because of endorphins. So, I said, if you want to feel really good all day, go for a nice hour workout in the morning. This is from McMaster's University, which is up in Toronto. So when depression strikes, it doesn't always get the attention that it does in younger people if you're over, let's say, the age of 50. After all, it's widely considered normal to feel negative emotions as people get older and deal with the issues like failing health and the end of their lives inching closer and the loss of family and friends. So when depression in seniors is taken seriously, it's usually addressed in the form of a prescription for antidepressants, which I am completely, unmitigatingly against. And that can only make the problem worse. There's never been a drug that's cured depression. Now, however, a new study has found a safe and effective depression fighter, especially if you're aging, and that is any form of aerobic exercise. So whether you exercise regularly or not, you're certainly familiar with the amazing feeling you get after a good workout or some vigorous physical activity. As you get older, however, your physical activity tends to drop, whether it's because of time constraints or physical ones. Unfortunately, that may be just when people need to exercise most of all. So, the researchers found that the same mechanisms that make you feel so good after exercise when you're young and are still at play also are the same in your twilight years. So staying active is an excellent way to fight depression and anxiety. And this was published in the American Journal of Physiology and Cell Physiology. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a brief break and come right back with not one but two original reports. Mama ku, mama sama, kuma ku sa. Mama ku, mama sama, kuma ku sa. Mama ku, mama sama, kuma ku sa. Mama ku, mama sama, mama ku sa. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to now focus upon two stories. These stories are important because they're emanating from two of the more respected sites that Wikipedia gains attention to because it's the go-to place for Google. So if you want to know about something, let's say you just want to know about curcumin, you would Google curcumin, and it would take you there. And then it would take you to Wikipedia, which would then give you the authority to know that whatever you're being told is accurate and don't question it. The trouble is, it's virtually always wrong on any topic involving health. Similarly, the New York Times is a paper of record. Whatever it says, especially if it's saying on the front page and the headline of the front page, then you're being told this is it. Now, for the more let's say the more professional-minded, those who are considered more advanced in their education, generally more, they're more into careers, lawyers, doctors, engineers, consultants, the titans of industry. That's their Bible. But what if their Bible was just a book of heresy? This is an article we're posting now. It's called New York Times Descends to Conspirator Paranoia with Richard Gale and myself. The New York Times continues to descend further into spewing fiction that masquerades as news. Its most recent misinformed analysis might be right up there with Judith Miller's delusional screed about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. Evidently, the Times has a propensity for disgracing itself. Now the newspaper's latest low is William Broad's essay touting a wild conspiracy theory that 5G technology's severe risks to human health and the environment is a covert Russian plot intended to sow confusion into the minds of the American public. As the patriotic loyalists of Russo-paranoia, Broad has dreamed up a hallucination that Russia is preparing to outpace the U.S.'s strategy to dominate the global Internet of Everything in the race to launch 5G technology globally. Aside from Broad's otherwise corporate-friendly stances supporting hydrofracking, genetically modified foods, GMOs, and the myth that vaccines do not contribute to neurological disorders, he has produced some excellent work about yoga culture and North Korea. Yet these are hardly topics that would enable a person to speak intelligently about electromagnetic frequencies, or EMFs, biomolecular effects on living organisms. Seen in its context, the Times article is timely. It was published just days before the National Day of Action to halt 5G tomorrow. The event being launched by Americans for Responsible Technology has the support of almost 100 organizations, including the Environmental Health Trust, the EMF Society Network, or Safety Network, Parents for Safe Technology, Wireless Radiation Education, and Defense, among others. Now, since the telecom industry and the FCC have no viable science, none, not a single study to support their claims done by independent researchers, then it goes through the mouthpiece of the Times, and there it has found a voice to further fuel Russia mania. Broad argues that there is no scientific support for 5G signals contributing to brain tumors, infertility, autism, heart tumors, and Alzheimer's disease. Although the research may arguably offer less than 100% certainty, the scientific evidence unquestionably confirms that 5G is assuredly unsafe. We found tens of thousands of scientists and medical experts agreeing. Now contrast this with the Europa EMF guideline that found, quote, strong evidence that long-term exposure to certain EMFs is a risk factor for disease such as certain cancers, Alzheimer's disease, and male infertility. Common electrofrequency risks include electromagnetic hypersensitivity, and that can mean headaches, concentration difficulties, sleep problems, depression, lack of energy, fatigue, and flu-like symptoms, end quote. Seemingly, the Times has never heard of the precautionary principle. That's a recognized standard for avoiding unnecessary risks. In January 2019, over 26,000 scientists submitted a petition to the United Nations, to the World Health Organization, the European Union, the Council of Europe, and the world governments opposing 5G rollout. Let me quote from the letter. Quote, despite widespread denial, the evidence that radio frequency radiation is harmful to life is already overwhelming. The accumulated clinical evidence of sick and injured human beings, experimental evidence of damage to DNA, cells, and organ systems in a wide variety of plants and animals, and epidemiological evidence that the major diseases of modern civilization, cancer, heart disease, and diabetes, are in large part caused by electromagnetic pollution, forms a literature base of well over 10,000 peer-reviewed studies, end quote. Yes, you heard that correctly. Over 10,000 peer-reviewed studies now collectively confirm 5G's measurable adverse effects. Oddly, the Times didn't bother to do its homework. In 2011, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, the IARC, classified electromagnetic frequencies as possibly carcinogenic in humans. This was based on research showing a direct correlation between glioma tumors, that's a malignant brain cancer, and wireless mobile phone use. The agency falls under the umbrella of the World Health Organization, a completely corrupted cesspool compromised by corporate conflicts of interest and biased influence. The World Health Organization's website, which Broad references, denies electromagnetic frequencies' adverse effects, nevertheless acknowledges the IARC's classification. A former chair of the IARC group responsible for evaluating the epidemiological and carcinogenicity of mobile phones or cell phone radiation was Anders Alborn, co-founder of a group called Gunnar Alborn, a Belgium lobbying firm. Let me guess. No, don't tell me. Yes, they provide public relations services to the telecom industry. Hence, the IARC is completely biased. The letter continues, quote, if the telecommunications industry's plans for 5G come to fruition, no person, no animal, no bird, no insect, no plant on earth will be able to avoid exposure. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, to levels of RF radiation that are tens to hundreds of times greater than what exists today, without any possibility of escape anywhere on the planet. These 5G plans threaten to provoke serious, irreversible effects on humans and permanently damage to all of the Earth's ecosystems, end quote. Mind you, these are over 26,000 scientists saying this. Between August 2016 and September 2018, over 400 new studies on electromagnetic radiation risks were compiled by public health professor Joel Moskowitz at the University of California, Berkeley. These studies cover earlier generational technologies, whereas 5G will be everywhere and far less safe compared to 4G technology in use today. Every 5G base station will contain hundreds of thousands of antennae, each aiming laser-like microwave beams to all devices. So if you're in your car, that's being hit. At home, your telephone, the smart meters, your computer, your cell phone, your laptop, all of those are receiving this. In an urban area, base stations can be installed as little as 100 meters. By the way, that's 328 feet apart. So virtually every block in every city in America. Today, nations with the highest EMF technological use are witnessing a dramatic increase in male sterility. Researchers at the National Academy of Medical Sciences in Ukraine placed study participants' sperm samples in incubation conditions either with or without Wi-Fi mobile phone exposure. Sperm exposed to the electromagnetic frequency showed substantial DNA fragmentation and loss of motility. More comprehensive in vitro and in vivo studies out of Hanyang University in Seoul, Korea, concluded that electromagnetic frequencies exposure dramatically altered reproductive endocrine hormones, gonadal function, embryonic development, pregnancy, and fetal development. In addition, pineal gland measurements observed a decrease in melatonin, which would contribute to either sleeplessness or poor quality of sleep or compromised immune systems. And that is commonly noted by persons with electromagnetic frequency sensitivity. Now, flying back to my animal sanctuary over the weekend, I was looking for where the exposure was coming from, and under every seat was a Wi-Fi. Now, think about how often people fly. Think about women who may be pregnant or wanting to conceive. Think of people who want an intentional pregnancy. You're getting hit nonstop when you're on that plane with electromagnetic frequencies. In schools that have Wi-Fi, the same. In your home, the same. And there are already other nations that would agree with the scientific majority outside of the private industry. France now bans mobile phone use from its primary and secondary schools. It is also against the law to advertise cell phones to children. Israel's Minister of Health has called for banning all Wi-Fi installation in schools. The city of Haifa has already done so. Ontario's schools label Wi-Fi transmitters as hazardous. Mumbai, India's largest city with over 18 million residents, has banned all cell towers from being erected in the vicinity of schools, colleges, hospitals, orphanages, and juvenile homes. Before any cell tower can be installed on building roofs, it must have 100% approval from residents. And Russia, which brought its intent to isolate with a conspiracy notion, started removing Wi-Fi from schools back in 2012. Sorry, I didn't see that in the New York Times. Nowhere in the Times piece does Broad provide credible references to the thousands of published papers warning about likely injurious consequences once we are all exposed endlessly to 5G frequencies. Ask yourself this. How many Americans have compromised immune systems? At least one-third. Those who have arthritis, lupus, heart disease, diabetes, prediabetes, cancers, inflammation within their brain, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, memory loss. So you're talking about a huge number of people who should not have any more negative impact upon an already compromised immune system, who are already manifesting diseases. Yet, that doesn't seem to be the issue here. In fact, he says, quote, and he's quoting a Marvin Ziskin, Z-I-S-K-I-N, an emeritus professor of radiological sciences at Temple University School of Medicine. He's quoted, quote, 5G emissions, if anything, should be safer than previous generations, end quote. Wow. Well, that's good to know. Is this guy in any way an independent scientist? I would assume so, or we would have been notified otherwise. So we did some homework, and Professor Ziskin happens to be a co-chair at the Institute of Electrical and Electronic Engineers, or LEEE. The organization is not scientifically impartial. It provides 5G training through the telecommunications industry. Its former president during the Obama Spectrum Frontier Initiative spent three decades with telecom giants AT&T and Lucent Technologies. And its current executive director and COO held senior leadership positions at the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. That's DARPA. And DARPA is the brain initiative for the military's future use of 5G. Its website, IEEE Spectrum, outlines its full support for colonizing the new frontier 5G technology. Wow. I would have thought that the readers would want to know that. For an excellent example of nonsensical fear-mongering, Broad is dishing out to Times readers. He writes, quote, hundreds of blogs and websites appear to be picking up the network Russia TV 5G alarms, seldom if ever noting the Russian origins, end quote. Frankly, you don't need to turn to Russia for information about 5G cell threats. We can simply listen to our own scientists in the United States. In fact, rather than turn to corporate-friendly federal agencies, Broad could have looked into the CIA's own records. Russia, in fact, knows a little something about electromagnetic frequencies and microwave health threats. In 1985, CIA declassified its, quote, Soviet-directed energy weapons report, detailing 878 long-term studies it conducted on microwave particle and electromagnetic frequency effects on the human body. To avoid confusion, 5G transmission is within the microwave band frequency. An overview of the Soviets' research is outright frightening. Their research determined the degree and amount of time required from exposure for the development of sensory somatic disorders, autoimmune nervous system disorders, cardiovascular disease, circadian rhythm disruption, and hypoglycemia, sensory motor disorders, and chronic fatigue, depression, and memory loss. Consequently, there has been no secrets about the health threats from microwave frequency exposure. They've been known for several decades, yet federal officials, the tech companies, and the media, such as the New York Times, has made a concerted effort to ignore the evidence. If 4G technology had been categorized and regulated as a pharmaceutical drug, it would have been black boxed and removed from the market long ago. And 5G will be far more toxic, and there'll be no escape from it. In conclusion, as a journalist, in our opinion, Broad has displayed gross negligence. anyone could have spent less than an hour searching the peer-reviewed literature and technological safety organizations' websites and walk away convinced that something is disturbingly awry with the institutionalized version of 5G safety. The fact that the New York Times would promulgate such conspiratorial foolishness is even more unsettling. Have we learned nothing from history? Phony corporate funding of the tobacco science instilled in us the belief that tobacco was beneficial to our health. Synthetic hormone replacement therapy was marketed as the perfect antidote for menopausal symptoms, despite the most comprehensive study to date by the Nurses' Health study that led to the FDA putting a black box warning on women's hormone replacement therapy. Our military personnel are indoctrinated into the illusion that depleted uranium exposure in the Middle East poses no health risks. It is perfectly safe for our soldiers, we are told. Lead in paint and gasoline and asbestos were likewise presented as harmless. Despite all the evidence to the contrary, the Basic Four Food Group pyramid was heralded as good science. How much further do we need to go down that rabbit hole? 5G is as bad as all of these other marketing fabrications and much worse. We can choose not to smoke or drink. We can decide on which foods we wish to eat. We have a choice to take a medication or not, but no one will be able to have a choice to avoid 5G exposure because it will be everywhere that you would go. With every public health issue, such as the one Americans face with 5G rollout, it took years to decades before a toxic product was removed. And that was before our federal agencies and the media became fully captured by private industry and special interest groups. Do not expect to find a single negative report regarding 5G technology released by any federal agency, and certainly not the telecom industry. If we do not act now, it will be too late after the planned 20,000-plus satellites are launched to drape the planet in electromagnetic frequency radiation. There's an urgent reason to be concerned about 5G rollout, especially for our children and the future children who will live in a sea of 5G radiation. Dr. Lennart Hardell, an oncology professor at University Hospital in Örebro, Sweden, has even considered the horrible thought that the telecommunications industry's plans to launch 5G globally may violate the Nuremberg Code. Dr. Broad, or Mr. Broad, are you ready to accept your responsibility for this sorely delinquent experiment that awaits us? We certainly hope you are. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment with our second investigative report of the day. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world and all the stations carrying us. Thank you very much. Please share this information. Wikipedia fails again. The case of misinformation about curcumin. Wikipedia states, quote, although thoroughly studied in laboratory and clinical studies, curcumin has no confirmed medical uses, end quote. Wikipedia also cites a 2017 review of over 120 studies that disclaims any of curcumin's therapeutic effects. For the moment, we can ignore the 2017 review until we look later at the failures of the Cochrane Collaboration, the flagship medical review project of evidence-based medicine. However, the review only looked at 120 studies. How many did we find? We found 11,800 entries for curcumin in the peer-reviewed literature found in the National Institutes of Health PubMed database. And we read the articles. according to the nonprofit HerbMed site, which has been recognized by the Wall Street Journal, Science Magazine, and Western Journal of Medicine, there have been 375 human clinical trials and 499 animal studies, 74 observational case reports, and 553 papers looking at curcumin's pharmacodynamic properties and other studies investigating the plant's chemistry, genetics, and use in traditional societies. Contrary to the Cochrane review that only looked at 120 studies, a recent larger meta-analysis of curcumin's ability to lower plasma leptin concentrations was conducted by universities in the United States, Weill Cornell Medical Center, Greece, Aristotle University, and Italy, University of Pavia, and Iran, Moshab University of Medical Sciences, and concluded that curcumin significantly decreased adverse lectin levels. A double-blind randomized controlled study with four-week monitoring found that curcumin successfully improved all parameters of metabolic syndrome under investigation, including enhanced body mass index, body fat percent, blood pressure, lipid profile, and C-reactive protein. Mind you, C-reactive protein can cause you to die if it's high from a heart attack or a stroke. An increased body mass index, meaning obesity, fat around your belly, that also is a predictor of death. And high blood pressure, a predictor of death. So here's a double-blind randomized study showing you that it impacted positively all those. An Australian study conducted at the universities of Newcastle in southern Queensland found curcumin sharply improved neurocognitive functioning and cerebroendothelial vascular dilator function in elderly patients that may reduce dementia risk. To further reinforce the health benefits of curcumin and discredit Wikipedia skepticism, the federal government has provided $150 million in curcumin research through the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health. So for a period of time, the MD Anderson Cancer Center down in Houston had a separate laboratory conducting curcumin research. Just in the United States, official scientific literature of medicine, there are nearly 12,000 studies. Evidence overwhelmingly supports curcumin's medicinal and functional benefits. That does not include the thousands of studies in medical journals in other countries where turmeric, of which curcumin is the active ingredient, has been used as a nutritional enhancer for millennia. Wikipedia's absurd, inaccurate, biased statement that, quote, although long used in Ayurvedic medicine, no high-quality clinical evidence exists for use of turmeric or its constituent curcumin as a therapy, end quote. Well, that requires little comment for the hundreds of pages simply listing research about the herb's medicinal value. Let me just give you a sampling. Curcumin administration reduces depression symptoms in patients with major depression. Published in peer-reviewed journal recently, Phytotherapy Research. Curcumin or combined curcuminoids are effective in lowering the fasting blood glucose concentration of individuals with hypoglycemia or diabetes. Pharmacological Research Journal. Curcumin appears to enhance clearance of amyloid beta in Alzheimer's disease patients. The Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. Meta-analysis of randomized controlled trials of 4 weeks or longer suggests that curcumin may afford some protection against oxidative stress. Nutrition Research. A curcumin extract is appropriate for the care of patients with joint problems, may also contribute to the regeneration of cartilage. Open Rheumatology Journal. A daily dose of 3.6 grams curcumin achieves pharmacologically efficacious levels in the body with negligible distribution of curcumin outside the gut. Cancer Epidemiological Research. A topical preparation of curcumin successfully decreased the markers of a metastasis, including but not limited to pain, breast tension, arrhythmia within 72 hours of administration. The Oman Medical Journal. And curcumin alleviates endothelial-induced oxidative damage in liver cells, Journal of the Ethnopharmacology. These are all recent. And by the way, I could list thousands more. And yet you wouldn't know that by reading Jimmy Wells' vanity site called Wikipedia. So here's where we're at. We can trust the accumulation of nearly 12,000 independent studies in the official peer-reviewed data library, the Library of Medicine. We can count upon the countless other studies in the worldwide databases. We can trust the numerous doctors throughout the history in cultures worldwide with proven clinical experience. Or we can trust a tiny group of expert wannabes, skeptics, who are anonymous, have no noticeable education or experience in nutritional biochemistry and preventative medicine. And this group, dominating Wikipedia's health pages, are ideologically and frequently politically aligned with the pharmaceutical industry. This is a long, sordid history of Big Pharma relying upon faux scientists, public relations firms, and astroturf groups for hire to promulgate its ideology. So in conclusion, imagine that the telecommunications and wireless industries that is to determine to bring 5G technology to the world were to try to stop federal funding for research about its technologies if that research was beginning to show negative impact. It happened. The telecom giants have enormous control over the media through advertising. That's a fact. Yet the public remains unaware of over 26,000 scientists on record who oppose 5G technology and the new generation cell towers because of their dire health risks. But you would never learn this by reading the New York Times or listening to the regular television networks. And it is much worse with the pharmaceutical industry. Therefore, are we to believe Wikipedia, that has a reputation for attacking dissent and only permitting content from people the encyclopedia selects as authorities, even if they have no authority in the field, no expertise, no background whatsoever? Yeah. When these people are completely unqualified to write anything about a given field, and then they stay anonymous, what does that say about our standards? The large majority of Wikipedia skeptic editors have 0 degrees in health subjects they criticize. They have never done any public studies. They have never conducted workshops or, let's say, an actual clinical study, published in that study's results in a peer-reviewed journal, and then presented it at scientific conferences. We have 40 times. And yet they will say that we have no qualifications. All of our sources are open. Our articles are meticulous. We have never had to correct a single one. Same with documentaries, same with radio broadcasts. With PhDs in human nutrition and public health science, professors at a major university, having taught at Pratt, City College, the New School, and Fairleigh Dickinson, among others. Having scientists from around the world invite me to attend their scientific symposium and present my information based upon original clinical studies, over 40, more than any other American scientist. I've done 40 clinical studies on human nutrition, lifestyle, and behavior, and how it impacts disease, and published in peer-reviewed literature with an open-door policy, with backgrounds and degrees in clinical nutrition, board-certified, and dietetic sciences. Yet they, with no background in any of the above, having done any research whatsoever, no clinical studies, and are not familiar with my own work, they then become the world authorities on curcumin or on any other subject, chiropractic. They're not chiropractors, but they're experts on chiropractic. Therefore, they must know through their bias what every person that's benefited from a chiropractic adjustment has gained. They don't have no background in homeopathy, but they know more evidently than a board-certified physician using homeopathic medicines and benefiting their patients. They know nothing about traditional Chinese medicine, which has been practiced for more than 5,000 to 7,000 years with billions upon billions of patients and published in really respected journals and validated, yet they will say they're the last word. Now, what does it say about us, It says that Wikipedia is an embarrassment to knowledge. Beneath the excellent information that has no direct impact upon our lives, the site serves as a hit organization for the topics that truly do matter. It no longer deserves its nonprofit status as a source of grossly negligent and fake information. And therefore, I would hope that we will not fund it and boycott it. Could you imagine questioning someone in a court of law where it's very important that the truth comes out, but the witness does not have to identify themselves, has no expertise in what they're talking about, and remains behind a screen, yet their word is more important than the prosecutors, the judges, and the jury? You would say, well, that's absurd. Yes, it is absurd. Look carefully at the people that we trust today who have no background, no qualifications, and yet speak as if they are more informed than hundreds of thousands of real experts in the field. It's time that Wikipedia, in its nonprofit status, and its misinformation campaigns, are exposed. Today, we just took curcumin. Tomorrow, we'll take another one. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you for listening, and have a nice day.